I have a little list of mantras that I have for different occasions, and I can do an in-breath and an out-breath and use that mantra, because I've done them a lot. It's very quickly soothing. That's if it's a little thing. If it's a little bit bigger thing, hey, it may be binge time, baby. Netflix and I are about to become close, up close and personal. The genie show, oh.
A lot of things can make us happy. Coffee by the window on a rainy day. The first snow of winter. A walk in the park on a sunny day. Or maybe it's seeing your favorite person, hanging out with the people you love most, or just a night in with your folks. People, the ones we choose to have in our lives, can have a lot to do with our happiness. But sometimes we rely too much on others rather than ourselves to make us happy. On this episode of The Genie Show, I have a chat with Jude Walsh about relationships, breakups, and more importantly, working on yourself outside of relationships. Jude's a self-help author, and with the know-how, she and I dive deep into her past and marriage, and what she's learned from it all, and how she uses those lessons to help others. Jude, thank you for joining me on The Genie Show. I think you've got some really valuable insight when it comes to recovering after we lose a deep love in our life. Now, love is such a huge part of the human experience. It can really, you know, nourish us. It can help us evolve, but it could also destroy us in some ways as well. You've written a book about love and how to kind of soothe your soul when you go through a breakup of a long-term partnership. I'm curious to know that there's so many self-help books out there. What do you think it is about your book that's particularly different?
Well, I do aim for a very specific audience. My readers are women who have been in a long-term relationship. The book is called Post-Divorce Bliss, but it could just be post-relationship bliss. Divorce was just my experience. But the group of people that I'm talking to have been in a committed relationship for a long time, thought they had found their life partner, spent years together building not just their partnership, but their life, their financial life, their social life, where they are in the world and how they interact with the world. And when that ends, especially if it ends abruptly or with betrayal, that is a huge jolt. And it takes some specific skills and some specific help to get through that. It took me, my personal experience, it took me years to adjust because I'm a writer. I was journaling the whole time and I could afford the best of the best help. And even with all that, it took a long time. So my desire, my passion was to get what I had learned into a very easy to read, user-friendly book, sort of distilling what I'd learned and what had been most helpful for me, with the hopes that it would help another person along the path a little faster. So that's kind of my audience, is people who've been in a long-term relationship, ended abruptly, and struggling to reinvent themselves. I think I'm well qualified to do that, to talk about that, because it was my experience. And I am so happy now. I'm completely on the other side. I use the term bliss deliberately. And that's just what I want to share. I want to get that out there.
I have a personal interest in this topic. I'm not married yet, and I haven't been married. But my mother, she had three marriages in her life. And in Sri Lankan culture, she grew up in Sri Lanka for 42 years. Marriage is such an integral part of your identity, especially for a female. And if you break up from a marriage, you wear the stigma and the scarlet letter, or whatever you may call it, for whatever reason. You're kind of seen as, you know, damaged goods in that particular cultural mindset. So I'm curious to know too, so when you wrote this book, your experience of divorce, Where were you at that time, if you don't mind sharing?
No, I don't mind at all. My growing up background is Catholic, went to Catholic school. Divorce, you just didn't do that. I mean, if something was really horrible, a marriage could be annulled, but I mean, it had to be really horrible. And when you got married, you took the vows very seriously. It was till death do us part. I married my high school sweetheart. I married at 16. I knew who I wanted to spend the rest of my life with. In my 50s, I didn't divorce till I was 59. To suddenly have that upended was difficult. I ran up against a lot of cultural norms, which I think is maybe what you're thinking about with your mom. In my immediate circle of friends, most people were not divorced. In my family, I think there was one divorce when I was younger, but her husband had been abusive. And we all applauded at the end of that. And I had a cousin divorce. But it's very unusual. And, you know, among my circle of friends, we most couples have a group of friends. There are no divorces. So literally, I brought with me all of this stuff about, well, what did you do wrong? What was your part in this? And I didn't know what my part was because in my particular story, I thought things were fine. And then my husband began to act differently. He was irritable. It seemed like nothing I could do could please him. He seemed to be just distressed with life in general. So my thought was, well, this is my partner and he's having a midlife crisis. And I will just love him through that because that's what partners do.
And you've had to do, right?
Yeah. And that's, you know, and I married for life. This wasn't like I could say, well, if you're going to be grumpy, I'm done.
It doesn't work that way. Yeah.
There's that concept of grace. You grant a person grace when they're having a difficult time. And if you love someone, you see them through it. And I was willing to do that until I found out he was having an affair. That's a pretty serious breach of the marriage. But even once I found that out, we started counseling. I went in 100%. I thought he was in too. And 9 months into the counseling, I found out he had been in contact with this person the whole time. So that was a very deep betrayal. That resulted in post-traumatic stress disorder. I really lost my way in the world. I lost 90 pounds because
wow.
I was overweight, but I was vomiting constantly. And I don't know if you remember, it was one senator's wife who, when she talked about when she discovered her husband was having an affair, the first thing she did was throw up. As I've been working with women around this, that's really common. And it's a stress reaction. Everything goes to the middle of your body and you're sick. So, but I kept it a secret the whole 9 months we were in counseling. And when I realized that he had not been all in, I decided I had to start telling the truth. So I did. And I was surprised at people's reactions. There was some of that. I actually had one friend say to me, well, what was your part in this? But after 9 months of counseling, I was like, hey, this is an absolute betrayal. If there was something wrong, he should have told me, been honest with me, if there was something not working in our relationship. And then I would have had an idea. But all he was telling me was we had our 30th wedding anniversary during this. And he gave me an infinity bracelet, one of those metal bands that doesn't begin or end and twist, just saying that was like our love. And he loved me 30 years and would love me 30 more. So I was blindsided. And I had the whole Catholic thing about I'm married for life. Even if I divorced, I would not remarry because divorce doesn't count. That's where I was at that time in my thinking. So that was difficult.
I can imagine because you're dealing with, I guess, when you're in a marriage, you know, there's so many emotions going through you, experiencing betrayal. Your body was showing you and warning you of how you were feeling and how this reaction was, you know, developing inside of you. But the other side, your beliefs that you've created since you were little. I mean, you said that you knew when you were 16. I mean, to make a life choice at 16 is, well, obviously the life experience that you have when you go into your 20s and your 30s, you make it a little bit more
I don't want to say educated choices, but you make choices based on a little bit more experience, like you've experienced and you know yourself a little bit more that time. But I'm also curious to know, I'm very curious on the Ginny show, being married to your husband for 30 years, obviously you had children. I'm wondering if there were ever got to a place where you thought, or when, if you did get to this place, where you thought that you could forgive him.
Yeah. And I want to give you a little extra piece of information here that was triggered by your saying your body. I was, from the time I found out about this till the time we divorced was 7 years, long time. All during those 7 years, I was still working under the premise that perhaps this can be revived. We can build a better marriage as a result of this. One of the reasons I was doing that was because he really was my best friend. You know, I used to joke about if we come to a party, it really doesn't matter who's there because I came with the most interesting and my most favorite person. So we had a deep love. So that was shocking to find out that he thought there was something wrong with that. But in terms of my body, I got breast cancer. Also very common in women who have been betrayed. And I didn't realize that. And I went to the Cleveland Clinic, which, you know, here in the United States is just a premier health organization. And they had a social worker interview you, which was lovely. You know, she wanted to know what's going on in your life that might be affecting your body. And I was like, well, let's see, you know, my husband had an affair and then he didn't give it up. And we're going back and forth. And, you know, my son has been ill and my mother is dying. And she was like, what? Well, you know, back up a minute. And she talked to me some more about the marriage. And she said, well, were you abused? And I said, oh, no. Oh, you know, he would never, you know, raise a hand to me. And she said, you do understand that some of what you're telling me is emotional abuse. And that was an eye opener to me because I was just operating from the point of, this is the person I love. He is in a bad place for whatever reason, is making bad decisions, but I'm going to stick with him because I believe eventually he will come around. Mm. So that was a long time. And breast cancer was the ultimate wake up call. And she literally said to me, you have to stop lying to yourself because it's showing up in your body.
Wow.
Yeah. That's exactly what she said to me. And once she said that, I thought, look, you know, okay, enough. You know, it's time to take control here and start looking out for myself. And I was also raised with that idea about, I can't tell you how many times I was told this as a child, who does the things that are hard? People who can, and you, my dear, can. So I believed this was a hard thing, but I could do it. I forgot that self-care thing. That always translated as selfish. It's like a cliche, but it's true. I always took care of other people first. So I had to do a huge mindset shift about that it was okay to take care of myself. And in this instance, where I was not being treated well, to be able to step away from that.
When you said that, it got me thinking about something. I was baptized and raised a Catholic. My mother was a devout Catholic. She loved Jesus. That was, no matter how many times she got married, Jesus was still a number one. Something that I found interesting was that, I don't know if I picked this up from my mother as a habit, because I know children imitate, you know, their environment and that's how their habits are formed. But what I noticed about my mother was similar to what you said. She took care of other people before her. And even though she was chasing this notion of love of what she thought she would be, the underlying or the undercurrent of who she was, I'm going to put other people before me. I've seen this not only in her, but also in my friends, because I went to Catholic school too, in people who were raised as a Catholic. Now, I'm not blaming the Catholic Church in any way, shape or form, but some of the teachings that I found and that I heard that we heard every week was very much of the mindset of serve others before you serve yourself, because serving yourself or taking care of yourself was seen as selfish.
I think we interpreted it that way.
Yeah.
We really learned to care for everyone else, which is a beautiful thing, but you can't pour from an empty vessel. And that was what I had to learn.
It's almost like the universe had to shock you into that, I think. I think the universe has moments like that where you let go of that part of yourself, which is, I believe, your connection, your soul connection or your core connection to the greater power. When you kind of put yourself aside and you put other people or other things, or you chase priorities that are not of service or in alignment of who you're supposed to be or who you are, I believe the universe comes in and shocks you and shocks you and shocks you to the point where you do actually. Do you think the divorce was that point for you?
Yes. The universe will start with a tap. And I had little taps in that, boy, why is he so grumpy? And, but this is not right. And then I got a little push because I found out about the affair by going through his briefcase. I have never in my life snooped, but I had a strong impulse and found this letter to his person, which was devastating to me. And so that was a little shove. Then there was the counseling. I was all in and he wasn't. There was a pretty hard push. And then finally, years into the therapy and years into the separation, I found out he had been dating and, you know, telling people we were separated. And I, no one even thought to tell me this. And my so-called friends were like, oh, didn't you know? No, why would I think that? We're still married. We're separated. It would have been nice to know this.
How did you evaluate your friendships after that experience?
Oh, that's something we should really talk about how relationships with your friends change after this kind of a relationship shift, because it's huge. Those people are not my friends any longer.
I was going to say, like, obviously, I mean, this whole conversation is about relationships pertaining to romantic ones and the loss of one, but I do believe that the people who influence you, that your core five people, your core 10 people, those who kind of are in your corner, those who influence you, I'm really saddened to hear that they didn't even think to say, hey, I'm sorry, you're going through this separation. Can I do something for you? How can I help? Instead, you had to find out, like, oh, didn't you know? That's awful.
Yeah, at first they were. When I first, you know, exposed the affair, people were very shocked and very sympathetic. But then, you know, a couple of years went by and I think they were like, well, what's wrong with you? Why aren't you just leaving that relation? You know, why don't you just divorce? Well, because I had this mindset that you don't divorce. And because I believed I would, you know, I believed there was hope here because that's what he was telling me. So we really did not divorce until he wanted to marry someone else. And then we divorced. So the whole thing was very complicated and very painful. When you're in a long-term relationship like that, you really have mostly couples, friends. When you're no longer part of a couple, you don't really fit in that dynamic. So for a while, they'll invite you like to maybe lunch with the girls or to a shopping trip. But the parties and the things are kind of awkward, especially if there's some tension between you and your separated or your ex person. And there was a lot of tension between us. So eventually they just sort of don't invite you. And then when they do remarry or get a new partner, that person sort of slips into what was your space. I know I do know some people who have divorced or had relationships and it's been more amicable and everything goes well. That was not the case for me. It was very uncomfortable. The Genie Show.
I like a bed that's really firm.
I need something a little softer than that.
Rest easy. With the Sleep Number 360 smart bed, you can both adjust your comfort with your sleep number setting.
Can it really help me fall asleep faster?
Yes, by gently warming your feet.
Okay, but can it help keep us asleep?
It senses your movements and automatically adjusts to keep you effortlessly comfortable. Sleep Number, proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep. It's our biggest sale of the year where all beds are on sale. Save 50% on the Sleep Number 360 limited edition smart bed. Only for a limited time. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
I find when couples break up too, when you are a friend of a couple, if you are a couple of friends and you go out with other couples, when a couple does break up, it's also putting yourselves in the shoes of the couple. Like, obviously you're gravitated towards one person more than the other. Maybe you saw that person more, or you have more things in common or whatnot, or that person's life easily integrates into yours more. It is a little awkward because sometimes you feel that even though you invite them to a party, it automatically puts you in the bucket of, okay, they've taken that person's side. And you have this divisive mentality coming up between friends.
I agree. And the message I gave my friends was, at the time, I think he's in trouble. And if you can be a friend to him, I would appreciate that. But I'm not comfortable being around him. So, you know, that's my choice to not be around him. And I talk about this a little bit in my book, and I say, sometimes people feel they have to take a side, and it may be related to work. Like maybe your couple friends are work-related friends, then the who's ever worked that is, it's more likely they'll gravitate that way. Or it may be that they just have to choose, and you should be comfortable with the idea that they may choose your ex as opposed to you. And if that's the case, let them go. You know, I got to a point where I was like, if you're not with me, I can let you go. I'm not angry with you. I don't hold any resentment towards you, but you're clearly not someone who wants to be with me as I am now. So I could let them go. And that was hard. Some of those people were like 40-year friendships.
Well, it's almost like you're not just grieving the marriage, you're grieving the friendships as well. It's a lot of grief to process. And obviously your body as a result was saying, this isn't feeling good for me. We need to do something else. Which kind of bridges to my next part of this conversation is that, what are some of the things that people who are going through or mourning a loss of a relationship or relationships can do to kind of, you know, get back to finding themselves and a sense of happiness again?
You know, I did something, and I gave it a name. I called it a post-divorce autopsy.
A post-divorce autopsy. Oh, okay.
Yes. Yes. And what that was, it had to do with looking at the divorce, at the marriage. You know, when you're divorcing, sometimes all you can see are the things that went wrong. You need to look at, first of all, you can look at yourself and say, what was my part in this going off the rails? I mean, my part was that I was kind of blind to some signals that were sent my way. The other big part of me was that I was willing to let him be very unkind and cruel to me while we were working this out. I didn't take care of myself. And I think the other thing was it went on too long. So as in that part of the autopsy, I could see where my flaws were and what I did wrong. And I then went through a forgiveness process. You know, like one of the things, and I had some mantras like, you know, there were things I did during the marriage that were not healthy for me. I have learned from that. I won't allow that again. And I know positive things to do in place of. So there's that whole piece. So there's that part of it. The other part of the autopsy is looking at, what did I bring to this marriage that was a strength? You know, what were my attributes as a partner that I brought, even if they were discarded by the ex? I mean, I brought a sense of loyalty. I brought passion. I brought willingness to support him while he went to school and honored. We honored his dreams first. I brought my joy. I'm really fun to be with. And we laughed a lot and talked a lot. Well, those are all the things from the autopsy that I'm going to keep, that those are the things I'm going to carry through. So literally I took the marriage and dissected it like a body. Here's the good stuff. Here's the stuff that didn't work. This part we're going to heal. This part I'm going to give a peaceful burial. And I literally did a little ceremony around that, knowing that that's all going to go into the earth of my life as compost. And it's going to help me bloom again. So yeah, I advise people to do that, to just, you know, sit down. And I, you know, I have journaling prompts and questions and things that can help people along with that. But that was really helpful. It sounded awful, like an autopsy. Well, something has died. This marriage has died, and I needed to grieve it, and I needed to make sense of it. And this was a process that helped me do that in an affirming way.
When you actually said this marriage died, I think humans have this affinity when they are in a breakup situation. They are grieving, but sometimes they don't realize that that's actually what's playing out, because grief is very much attached to loss, which is very much attached to something finite like death. And I think when you call it that, when you call it an autopsy, it kind of puts that grief or the grieving process into perspective.
Yes. And it's much like grieving a death, it's cyclical, because you're not only grieving the marriage and what was, you're also grieving what you thought your future was. You're grieving the loss of what mine have been. That will bubble up again and again. You know, different, oh, like you know, when it's the anniversary of what my marriage was, I'll think, whoa, it would have been this many years at this point. And then I allow myself to sink into that grief for a little bit and really feel it. It was something very important to me. So it's a huge loss. Even though I don't want it back and I'm very happy now, that's not the point. The point is it was important and it hurt to lose it. I've been reminded of that. I'm just going to sink into that and spend a little time appreciating that loss and appreciating where I am now. But it's okay to, even if you're already in another relationship, it doesn't devalue the relationship you're in now by mourning something that was important to you before.
Other than having this, I guess, this intentional cutting of the cord or whatever you want to call it and what flavor you believe it to be, other than that kind of intentional grieving and, you know, physically putting the relationship to bed or, you know, blessing it and letting it go, what are some other ways that you can really soothe yourself? I like how you said you took away the good part or the value that you brought to the marriage and you wanted to carry, let that live on. What are some other parts?
It's good to have a little pocket full of self-care trick.
A pocket full of self-care. I like these little things that you got. So what's in, is it like a self-care kit?
Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. And it's, and depending on how big the loss is at the moment that you're feeling, like sometimes it's just like, oh yeah, I'm sorry, I don't have that anymore. And other times it's like, wow, I forgot about that. So I have a range in my pocket, you know, and a simple thing is, of course, I have a little list of mantras that I have for different occasions, and I can do an in-breath and an out-breath and use that mantra because I've done them a lot. It's very quickly soothing. That's if it's a little thing. If it's a little bit bigger thing, hey, it may be binge time, baby. Netflix and I are about to become close up close and personal. Have you seen Frankie and Grace?
I love that. It's a great show as well because it's about loss and divorce
and shock. Yeah. So I go down the binge road on Frankie and Grace or something else that I equally enjoy. I love the Hallmark Channel. You know, I just watch a movie with a happy ending. Yeah. Works for me. I find motion helps. You know, you're Catholic, so you know solvitur ambulando. It is solved by walking. And I walk. And if I have an opportunity, depending on when I'm feeling this, I go to Zumba because I just dance it out. If there doesn't happen to be a Zumba class available, welcome to my living room studio. So I move that. If it's something even bigger, like it, sometimes if it's around your financial status when you divorce and your lifestyle will change. So sometimes if I'm realizing that, I may need a trip. I may need to go somewhere. And I can always find a way to do that very economically. But it's sort of a bigger form of motion. I literally relocate for a weekend or a week. So and always, 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 I have a pocket full of wonderful friends that I can just call and say, you know what? I'm just feeling a little bluesy. And would you mind listening to me talk about my marriage for a few minutes? So you can see I've got a range of stuff that, and yeah. I think we should all have that. And it's, you know, it's a form of self-care. The other thing that really helps me with finances, if I'm worried about finances, I immediately give away money. And it can't be like $5. I have to give away enough money to feel it because that's telling me that I am prosperous enough to do that. And that shifts my money mindset. And just going and doing something else for someone else. I don't know. Did your mom have this rule? Mine had this one. You need to do something good for someone every day. If the person knows you did it, it doesn't count.
Oh, yes. She told me this story. I don't know if this was actually straight from the Bible or something that one of her priests told her, but she said that one day two people went to church. One was a rich man and one was a really poor woman. The rich man brought out his big checkbook and he wrote a big check to the church and he presented it to the priest, whereas the poor woman in the back just put $4 in the box and left quietly. And she said the poor woman did more of a service to the church than the rich man did because the poor woman was doing it from a place of selfless service. And the rich man was doing it from a place of instant gratification and acknowledgement and validation. I don't know if that was from the Bible or something she may have made up just to make me be selfless, but that's one of the goals that I have for myself, is to do an act of kindness for a stranger. And it doesn't have to be, they don't have to acknowledge that I did it at all.
I can tell you, as a little kid, that was really hard, because I would say, "Mom, guess what I did?" And she'd go, "That doesn't count."
Yeah.
"That's really lovely. I'm glad you did that. Go find one more." It's like, wow. I kind of think she was teaching me not to blab as much as anything, but just doing something for someone else. I have three dogs, and they're amazing companions to me. And one I'm working on training to be a therapy dog to visit nursing homes. That kind of thing is so nice. I mean, it gets you right out of yourself, and you meet the loveliest people that way. It's almost like whenever I do something where I start off saying, "I just need to do something for someone else," at the end of it, I've always gotten something. It's just the way the universe works, I guess, but it's very blissful, you know, and healthy. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but that's kind of my scope.
I'm kind of going to flip this conversation on its belly at the moment, Jude, and ask you, I'm in a long-term relationship, obviously not married yet and haven't been married, but I'm wondering, what can I do to be a better partner? Is there anything that you have learned along the way, even after anything ended, you're like, "I wish that could have been done better," or that kind of thing? I have a certain vision for every role I play in my life. So obviously I'm a podcast host, I'm a sister, I'm a partner, I manage my own company, so I've got the manager hat on there too.
Daughter
as well. Yeah, absolutely. So there's all these roles that I play. So I have a vision to try and be the best I can in each role. So is there anything that you could share with me or anyone who's listening that during the long-term commitment, is there anything that can be done that you found successful to nourish the relationship?
Be honest. Don't keep things that are bothering you inside and pretending that everything is all right when it's not, because you deprive your partner of the opportunity to work on that. If something is bothering you, and I don't mean be unkind or mean, but don't just let it bubble under the surface, because then what will happen will be an affair or financial mismanagement or just a lack of connection. My absolute deal breaker in all my relationships now is honesty. You have to tell me the truth. And I know that with my body. If I'm not telling the truth, you can get cancer. You can lose your gallbladder. Your body is not going to sit well with it. But if you do it with the little things, just when something bothers you, speak up right at that moment. Say, "You know, it really bothers me when we're outside and we're having a cup of coffee on the deck and you're just chattering the whole time. I'd like part of that time to be quiet." Now, that's a little thing, but that's the kind of thing that could put a fissure in a relationship. So take a couple of opportunities a week to just check in and say, "Is everything good with us? You know, is there anything I'm doing that's unsettling us? Or is there anything I'm doing that you'd really like more of?" You know, and could you please, can I ask you the same thing?
The constant check-ins. I like that, dude.
In a very kind way, with the idea that you're growing. I mean, I had a long marriage, and we really grew together from those 16 and 17-year-olds. I mean, he finished law school. I got a doctorate. We had a child. You know, we were still best friends throughout that. But at midlife, it really went off the rails.
Yeah.
And that would probably be another tip, to be aware that there are points in relationships that are a little more vulnerable than others. I mean, my mother used to say to me, "Jude, men are weak." I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, you know, you watch. If a man's wife died, he gets married right away. Men are weak. They need someone around them all the time, and they're not completely reliable." And I always would say, "Oh, but not when I would name my husband." She'd say, "Okay, Jude." And then sure enough, you know, he did have a weak moment. And I was not expecting it. And she was trying to give me heads up. And it wasn't that she thought there was anything wrong with my ex. She was just telling me her life experience. So just being aware that things can go wrong. And then my third thing would be to be very careful of yourself, that what you bring to the relationship is you. It's your gift to the world. And to be aware of if someone is not respectful and loving of that, it's up to you to speak up, set a boundary, make a change, you know, do what needs to be done. Those would probably be three that I could think of off the top of my head.
Jude, thank you so much for sharing time with me today on The Ginny Show. I've learned a lot about how to grieve through relationship breakups. And it's not even romantic relationships when I think about it. I'm thinking about friendships that you've outgrown and friendships that no longer serve you or you serve them anymore. It does take a grieving process rather than kind of like a denial or a push aside kind of thing that humans tend to do. It's like, I don't want to think about that. I'm just going to be angry and think about it later. But thank you so much for sharing such value and insight. How can we find you on social media?
You can find me on my website, which is secondbloomcoaching.com. I'm Jude Walsh on Facebook. And on Instagram, I'm Jude Walsh _ writer coach. Jude Walsh _. I'll give it to you. You can put it in the notes.
Yeah,
and I do want to tell your readers that your listeners, sorry, I'm thinking about my book.
Yeah, no worries.
I will put a link in there. And if they email me, I will send them a PDF.
Wow.
Yeah,
there you go.
I would love to do that. It would be my pleasure. Like I said, it was a hard journey for me. I'd like to help somebody else have an easier path. And it's been really fun talking with you.
Back at you, Jude. It's been an absolute
pleasure. Say hi to your mama. I like her.
This is Kat.
And Nat from the Mom Truth Podcast.
Does your little one love Paw Patrol?
What about dinosaurs?
Well, the new season of Paw Patrol is here, and guess what?
It's a dino rescue. I can't wait for my kid to watch each episode 10 times a night.
All of your holiday and birthday gift shopping is pretty much done because, of course, there are a whole new batch of dino rescue toys. And for a limited time at Target, get 15% off the new Paw Patrol dino rescue toys with the code PAW15. Check it out. It's gonna be awesome.